Are you ready to revolutionize your hiring and build amazing, diverse teams? Then look no further than Olio. Olio doesn't believe in a one-size-fits-all approach, unlike other talent acquisition software. The AI-powered software is fully customizable to fit your unique recruitment processes, allowing you to have your hiring time, improve hiring diversity, and gain valuable insight, all delivered through one seamless, intuitive platform. Experience the power of collaboration with Olio. Visit Olio.com for more information. That's Oleo.com. This is William Tincup, and you are listening to the Recruiting Daily Podcast. Today we have Keith on from SmartRank, and our topic today is talent acquisition doesn't belong under HR. It belongs under operations. So probably a decade ago, I did this presentation in Omaha where I talked about HR being the 100-year-old house. And it was fun. I was asking questions of the audience, like, why is payroll under HR? Like, why is that a finance or accounting? Like, why is it under HR? It's just crazy to me. So I literally broke down everything in HR and I said, what is HR really supposed to be doing as opposed to what is been given to HR to do? And so Keith and I are really going to take this into talent acquisition, more specifically outside of HR, and really kind of talk about, like, talent acquisition, where if we were doing it, you know, we didn't have any history and we were have a blank slate, how would we do TA? Where would we put it? Who would be over it? How would we do it more effectively? So Keith, would you do us a favor and introduce both yourself and SmartRank?
Yeah, happy to. So my name is Keith Hewlin. I'm the CEO and co-founder of SmartRank. And SmartRank is a SaaS solution for talent acquisition teams that completely automates the job applicant screening process without needing or using a resume at all, and gives the hiring managers exactly what they are looking for in candidates.
That sounds easy. So I love that. And let's talk a little bit about TA, your experience with TA. And you've been on 1,000 calls with TA professionals. So what do you, when we talk about, okay, because we're making a bold statement. The bold statement is it's dumb for it to be under HR, or at least it might have made sense at one point. It doesn't make sense now. And it should be under operations, and operations being defined as your COO that cares deeply about business stability. And so they care about staffing. They just care about staffing in a different way historically. How'd you first come up with this idea?
Because I guess you could say that I've fallen under or been a part of operations for the majority of my career. My background is a non-traditional talent acquisition background, meaning that I come at it from the hiring manager, executive leadership standpoint, not directly from the recruiter kind of standpoint. So I see it from the other side of the house. And it's not just me, right? I've worked with hundreds of other hiring managers and leaders in my career that all feel very similar to me, that this is a function that belongs under the same roof as them, as opposed to a completely different area of the company that can't really relate to exactly what, you know, they're looking for on a day-to-day basis.
Pros and cons. We'll do pros and cons of TA being under HR and pros and cons of it being under operations.
Okay. Well,
pros and cons of it being under HR, I'd say a pro would be, whether or not it's been efficient or not, it's been under HR for a long time. That could also be a con, I guess. Now I'm talking myself out of it. But yeah. I was talking myself into saying, okay, TA, at least budget-wise, it makes sense because it's under HR. HR and recruiting have this kind of at least this demarcation of onboarding, where everything prior to onboarding is recruiting, and then after everything after onboarding or onboarding and after is HR. So there's, at least historically, I'm going to talk myself into this being a con as well, by the way, but I'm going to stay on the pro side as much as I can. But there's at least in a lot of people's minds that have been doing both HR and TA for a long time, there's this historical line of demarcation. So I'll just stop there. What do you think of that as either a pro or a con? And what do you see as a pro of TA staying under HR or a con of it staying under HR?
I agree with you that this is where it has resided. I find it interesting that it has, right? This is something where people have just shoved talent acquisition into an area that will take it in a way. I know that maybe it doesn't sound great to say, but that's what's happened. Because if you look at all of the reasons why it shouldn't belong underneath HR, there are a ton of them, a ton that make a lot of sense. I struggle to think of pros. I really do. I'm trying to be really objective here, William, and I struggle to think of a single pro. In fact, I just was at a conference a couple months ago, and I sat down with a very smart head of talent acquisition, and we went out to lunch, and I asked her a question, and I said, I want to open this up. Where do you think that talent acquisition belongs, under HR or operations? Her immediate answer was, it belongs under HR. And I said, interesting. Why do you say that? And she started saying, like, that's where it has resided. That's where I came up, is through HR. And that's right. Where then I got into talent acquisition. Same thing you just said. And then I started giving my rationale for why I believe it doesn't. And then at the end, she goes, okay, I'm going to change my answer. I think I'm with you. I think it, now that you say what you said, I think maybe it does fall underneath operations. So this mindset of this is how it's always been done, that doesn't mean it's the right way. It just right. Means that's the way it's been done.
Yeah. And people that have that argument, you can break them pretty easily. Philosophically, you can break them pretty easily because you can say slavery was a tradition. Yeah. Right. Lynching was a tradition. So not all traditions are equal, and not all traditions should obviously continue. So that's just right. Because something's historically been done or we understand it as the norm doesn't mean we shouldn't challenge the status quo, which I think gets us to kind of the pros and cons of maybe of TA being under operations. So what would a pro be of TA reporting? You know, we're ripping it out of HR. It's now under operations. So what's a pro there for that to happen?
Yeah. Okay. So a lot. So let's just...
Alphabetical? Yep. Got it.
Okay. I'll just start running through a list. Number one, you know, let's just look at very high level. HR has certain stereotypes, and a lot of these stereotypes are true, right? No budget, no authority, very little innovation. And as a result, TA under HR has followed suit, hasn't really innovated a ton in the past 25 years, at least from a basic screening process, which is my area of expertise. I can tell you that it has changed very little. And so these stereotypes kind of place TA in a subservient role. And I know that, you know, is something that the audience is probably, oh, that doesn't sound good. It doesn't sound good, but it's true, right? This is because that's how HR is perceived, right or wrong. That is how they are perceived. And by TA being underneath that team right off the bat, they're following underneath that same perception. And that's not a good thing. The hiring managers, they're responsible, which I'll call that operations, are responsible for interviewing, hiring, onboarding. And when I say onboarding, I'm talking about the real stuff, the real onboarding. I'm not talking about I-9 and here's where the bathroom is, right? I'm talking about like real detailed onboarding of this, how you're going to do your job. They're doing the training, the developing, the managing, and maybe even managing an employee out of the organization. So why on earth would there be another group that falls underneath HR responsible for finding and screening these potential hires and people that are going to be on that operations team? That doesn't make sense. I also think that you have a big pro if you were to put this under operations of aligned goals, right? Look at the metrics that TA cares about that they're shooting for. Time to fill, time in process, butts in seats, right? Versus quality of hire,
right?
Interview to hire ratio, the real cost of hiring, right? The real cost of it. Under operations, those things would most likely be looked at with a much deeper look, with a much bigger lens on a microscope. Look at a concept like, I'll just ask this, who is responsible for high turnover in the company?
It lands on HR's desk, and so they get the blame for sure. But where we've historically talked about it is it's managers, it's hiring managers, it's the managers that people don't leave companies, they leave managers, which I'm still not 100% on. But I think who gets the blame for regrettable turnover for sure is HR.
And look, I think the answer is it depends who you ask. If you 100%. Ask talent acquisition or HR, they're going to say it's the operations and hiring managers. If you ask the hiring managers and operations, they're going to say it's HR and talent acquisition. What if you're under one roof and you no longer get to point the finger across the aisle? Do you then still get to use that as an excuse? There's a stat that's been going around for over a decade. I saw it pop up not too long ago that there's a 46% failure rate for 0 to 18 month hires. And that's at all levels, not just individual contributors, but managers, directors, even VP level. That is a staggering statistic if that's still true. I see other ones that are around there, 37% Sherm says, or somebody else says it's 54%, but let's call it 40, 45%. That's a staggering statistic. People should be getting fired for that. If anything in an organization worked almost half the time, that group would be done. If you only sold 50% of your quota as a salesperson, you're fired. If your product only works 50% of the time, your product team is getting fired. Your software developers are getting fired. If your shipments only make it there to your customers 50% of the time, that whole team's getting fired. So yet this one falls somewhere in pointing fingers, not if it resided under one roof.
So I'm thinking about resistance, and because it makes sense, right? These are the things that always, it makes sense. And then it says, okay, then why don't we do it? And the first thing that comes up in my mind is resistance. Okay, what kind of either political capital or kind of resistance to the status quo are we going to face? Candidates, okay, candidates aren't going to know any different. So there's no resistance from candidates, in my opinion. Recruiters, I think after the initial shock, I don't think there'd be much resistance from recruiters. Hiring managers, again, after the initial shock, I don't think that there'd be much resistance from hiring managers. In fact, they'd probably love it because it'd be more on the quality side of things. I think the resistance would come from either HR or ops. Either ops not wanting to add more stuff to their plate, fair assessment, or HR not wanting to give something up. What's your assessment of kind of the resistance that we might face?
Yeah, I agree with everything you said there. And although I would add just one caveat to the talent acquisition recruiter folks that are making that switch, which would be some of them may not be able to make that switch. There's some of those folks have been entrenched into this is how we do it. You update job descriptions, you look at resumes, and then like these just very old school type of thinking that some people just can't break the habit. That's how they've always done it. That's how they're going to come to it. So I think there'd be some resistance there for sure. I think there'd definitely be a changing of the guard in a lot of companies that says, what used to be a recruiter 20 years ago is not what we consider a recruiter to have those same skills and qualifications today. This is what we're going to actually, this time to fill stuff, that's gone. We're not going to do that. So if that's what you're used to managing too, you can go ahead and get that off your plate. I agree with you that the leadership would be the challenge, but I would challenge both of those leaders. And I would say, if you're objective about this, where does it put your things aside, where does it actually belong? Like operations, why on earth would you delegate? If you have a 46% turnover rate, why on earth would you delegate that to another group? And HR, I would say, do you not have enough on your plate? Like you just listed at the beginning of this call, a number of things they already have on their plate. It seems like in the span of my career, more and more things keep getting shoved under HR. And just to call it out, these are things people don't want. Nobody wants to do payroll, so they shove it underneath there. Nobody wants to do training, but like training is critical. Like those types of things are so important. I can tell you, I've got firsthand experience of dealing with these things where if you stick the wrong thing under the wrong function, you're going to get a really bad result. That's just how it works. Like you need subject matter experts involved in the process. I say this all the time that hiring managers are generally, if this was a play, they're treated like a supporting cast member instead of the lead. There's no reason that a hiring manager shouldn't be the lead in this process. And yet, this is your job, TA. You go do this. No, you're going to have to manage that person, maybe fire that person. Like you're the one that really needs to be at the front of this and getting those two teams aligned. Is not something I think is a good idea. It's something that companies might want to think about. I think that if they don't start making these moves soon, And by the way, when I consult smaller companies that haven't already created all these ways of doing it the same way as always, and I bring this up to them, they're like, yeah, that makes sense. I think we're going to go ahead and make those changes before we get down the wrong road here. And I'm like, great. So I'm seeing you can make those changes in smaller companies where they can move like a speedboat. It's the bigger companies that I think are just going to continue to struggle. They're going to continue to have these problems. They're going to continue to have people complaining at the other department. And then 5 years, 10 years down the road, they're still going to be doing the same thing. But you know, if it doesn't.
I was going to ask you about that, the transition, if you will, because as you said, with small companies, there's really nothing that's been ingrained. There's nothing written in concrete. Yep. So if we start there and we have less than 100 employees, is usually where an HR kind of kicks in, at least historically. Okay, so if we're not already, we don't have to think about how we did it yesterday type stuff, and it just becomes normalized. Okay, recruiters report to COO. And the recruiting operations and the operations people are all in sync. Great. No one knows any different. Like, even if you come from the outside, it's okay. It just becomes the new normal. Like, all right, we used to report to HR, report to ops. Yeah, so eventually we all report to finance. So, you know, it's just a different route to get to the same place. The larger comes. So I see that, like, the immediate, like you said, like they can flip a switch. But we could do that tomorrow at a small company. The larger companies, and larger companies isn't just the global 100, the larger companies being like a couple hundred, maybe a couple thousand people, where there has been historical kind of norms, I think it's going to be a slow burn. Someone's going to take it on as an innovation. So we saw this with people operations a couple of years ago at Silicon Valley, that they didn't say HR. They didn't say human resources. They didn't say HR. They called it people operations. And what I found fascinating about that movement is it was still HR. They still put compliance and payroll and a bunch of other stuff under it, but it was more of an operational feel. They were looking at it from an operational lens and more data and more metrics and just kind of more data decisions in HR. Great. This is an extension of that and saying, okay, TA needs to be rethought of, and it needs to be thought of not just in its own, what we do inside the four walls of TA, but whom it reports to and why.
Yep. Yeah, I think people will make a mountain out of a molehill in those size companies. Like, I think, you know, if you're a 1,000 person company, I would be asking the questions of don't give me the reasons why, you know, why you can't, why you shouldn't. I want you to tell me what the catastrophic things would be if come Monday, today's Wednesday, if come Monday, we decide that we're going to move talent acquisition under operations. Don't worry, HR, you don't need to do a thing. We're just going to move them under. They're going to now, the leader of TA is now going to report under the leader of operations. Tell me the catastrophic things, right? We're not changing systems yet. We're not changing. There's no retraining of anything. We're just moving who they report to. This happens all the time in companies, right? You have this, like, sales teams and everything. Well, we're going to move this. We're going to extend this team and grow this. So now you report underneath this person. That happens all the time under operations. So why would that be a case where you couldn't just move that team under? And that would be my first suggestion. Just move the team, right? Now, if you're the person that's in charge of operations, naturally, you're going to be curious at a bare minimum, and you're going to start looking in. And I'm going to say this, there's a lot of things you're not going to like. You're not going to like, and you're going to want to make some changes to. I met with a person that was a director of DE&I at a fairly large aerospace company. I'll just say that. And this person that I spoke to said that he didn't know what I did. He didn't know that I was in the talent acquisition space at all. So I just started asking him questions. Tell me about how this is going. How have things been going? So he's telling me about everything. And then I said, do you have any experience working with the talent acquisition teams? And he got a huge smile on his face, William. And he said, I do. Yes. And I went, interesting. Tell me. He doesn't know what I do. I said, tell me about your experience. And he said, that team was probably the most resistant to any type of changes that we talked about. And I said, wow, I find that really really interesting considering like all the TA leaders I talked to talk about how important DE&I is. And he said, oh, I can't tell you, like, we just had round after round with them. Everybody else, every other department was, yeah, this seems, this makes sense. This,
yeah, because you're it's, remember that book years ago, Who Moved My Cheese?
Yes. Yes, I do.
This is an extension of that.
That's exactly right. And so look, that leader, he said it really stemmed from the leader. The leader was like, this is how our process works. What I found fascinating, and this is where I'm tying this together, is the director of DE&I said, well, the first thing we did is just unpack the process. We just needed to know how it works. And Keith, what it was astounding how inefficient,
how
ineffective,
broken. Yeah.
How broken it really was. Now, again, this is coming through the lens of essentially somebody that's an I guess in this respect reported under operations, which was very interesting, and said, look, we just broke down the process and we don't know that much about TA, but we know that seemed ridiculous. And when we started making suggestions, they were not having it. And so, look, if that reports under operations and you start peeking underneath the hood and you start seeing things you don't like, but now it reports to you, so now you're getting bonused on those things, you've got motivation to change them. And you start innovating and you start saying, now you have budget, now you have authority, now you can start innovating. And now you're going to be more productive because this isn't going to work anymore. So I think that's the first thing they could do is just move the department. That doesn't do much at all. You just got to go into your system there and change the who their reporting structure under. And that's the first step.
You know, what's interesting is operations. When I learned it in school, it was very methodical in the sense of there's inputs, there's throughputs, there's bottlenecks, and there's outputs, a couple other things. But basically, you could look at anything process-wise and just look at it and say, okay, there's things that come in, there's things that go through, there's things that where it gets tight or it doesn't work as efficiently, and then there's outputs. And we know that that's hiring. We just described hiring in an abstract way. So it would help, I think, what I love about the idea is it would help recruiters understand how to operationalize and make things more efficient for everybody involved, hiring managers themselves, candidates, executives, the whole bit, because they'd be thinking about it from an operational perspective. And so I like that. Now, two final questions. One is, would you, in this recommend, not with a small company, because I think we fix that pretty easily, but with a larger company, would you move HR over? Under operations?
No.
You keep HR separate?
Not yet.
Okay.
I think that would probably be too much for a company to handle at one time. But over time,
yeah.
Yes, I would.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the reason why is because just when it comes to fundamentally changing the efficiency of something, I'll just use a really specific example that's something that we deal with every day. If you just look at one single aspect of TA, recruiters, for the most part, are just going through and opening up one applicant after another and looking at a resume and comparing it to the job description. An operations person that really dug into that, see, a lot of people don't know how TA works, right? They have no idea how it's actually being done. Right. And if they were to look at just that one aspect, they would be like, what in the hell is going on here? What do you mean? You look at every person one, like, why wouldn't you just look at the top people? Because we don't know who the top people are. Surely there's a system out there that can tell us that, right?
Again, the inputs are coming in. How are you getting a bottleneck because you can't look at 1,000 candidates. There's an immediate bottleneck, time wasted on candidates you never should have even spent time with.
Yes.
And even people, candidates, not to blame recruiters, candidates that should have never even applied to those jobs.
That's
anyhow,
right.
Last thing I wanted to ask you is like executive sponsorship. Like, I've just had the experience in my life that if you want real change to happen in something like this, what we're talking about, moving TA from HR to operations, you're going to have the board and the C-suite on board with this idea. Like, they're going to have to get behind it and love it and want it to happen, or you're going to be fighting uphill the entire time. Is that, first of all, what's been your experience with executive sponsorship? And if so, are we on the same page?
100%. I spoke to a CEO earlier this morning, and he was beside himself how the CEOs can be so disengaged in the hiring process. And it's very common, obviously, and the bigger the company, the more disengaged they are. Right. But listen, people are the most important And in a lot of cases, the most expensive asset that a company has.
100%.
Period. So why on earth, if you're a CEO and you want your company to operate better and you want it to be more successful and you want higher shareholder value and things like that, you should probably care about the tip of the spear of the people that are actually being looked at and coming in the door in the beginning. That's where you should start. And so, yes, I think that there's a case there where you would want to get executive 100%. You want to get executive sponsorship to really make sure that happens and that the people in charge of operations and HR both know this is what's happening and you need to play nicely because this is where we're going.
And it's a good thing. It's a positive thing. It's not like somebody's being penalized. It's just there's a more effective way of doing this. And this is a more effective way. These are people that think about operations all the time. It's going to actually help everyone, hiring managers. It's going to help everybody. Not a bad thing. It's just, again, getting past some of the historical stuff.
It's but different.
That's different. That's exactly right. This has been absolutely fantastic. Thanks again for your time and coming on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me, William. Always a pleasure.
And thanks for everyone listening to the Recruiting Daily Podcast. Until next time.